Welcome to the Chat Room, the podcast on humanitarian action by the Center for Humanitarian Action in Berlin. Today, we start a new series of episodes on contested aid. And for this, Chair Director Ralf Südhoff welcomes Dr. Sema Karosmanolo, Director of Support to Life and former chair of the NIA Network.
We welcome today Sema Karosmanolo in the chat room, who has been working in the field of humanitarian aid for over 27 years, to talk about contested aid. We're kicking off by this episode a new series on contested aid, which was also the focus of our latest CHAR 25 conference and will be of our new CHAR work plan, as we see this as a key challenge for both development and humanitarian communities for the years to come. And with whom could we better kick this series off? Sema, you've carried out project work in India, Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, and other countries. You acted as a chair of the NIA Network, the, one might say, key network to represent voices from the Global South on all kinds of humanitarian issues. Your new focus of work, or your latest one, starting already 20 years ago, was in Turkey, where you've been the founder and until today the director of Support to Life, with a focus on emergency relief and recovery work, protection and resilience work for displaced populations in particular. Sema, if you look at your work in Turkey, but also your great international horizons and experience, would you second that? Are we entering a new era of contested aid?
Thank you, Ralf. It's a pleasure to be here and to share some of my experiences, but also some of my projections going forward. We definitely are at a turning point, I feel, in terms of the aid sector in general. Of course, we have been talking about for quite some time that we are unable to meet growing humanitarian needs. So not enough resources are being channeled, and the humanitarian system, as well as the development system, is trying to find ways of making, of covering these humanitarian needs in a more effective manner, a more efficient manner, and a more accountable manner. So this is something we have been talking about for quite some time, but I think the most recent abrupt cuts in funding has actually put a pressure on us to be thinking more radically as to how we do things differently. So for sure, I think we are at a turning point, and we do need to look at alternative, innovative, different ways of doing this for sure. And from where I stand, of course, localization, switching to a more locally led action is definitely the way to go about this.
Many thanks. You mentioned already that from your view, it's a turning point. I mean, in particular in the humanitarian world, challenges are very hands-on already with the end of US aid a few weeks ago, given that US provided more than 40% of global humanitarian funding. But many call it also a broader crisis of values, of principles, of legitimacy. I mean, especially if you look at humanitarian aid, most obviously all this is questioned in Gaza, in Ukraine, in Syria, in Yemen, etc. The discussion focuses on the so-called humanitarian reset in the humanitarian arena, with ambitions to make aid more local, more efficient, more targeted, with a focus on the most vulnerable people and on life-saving programs. At the same time, there's a lot of critique, in particular from the Global South, on the reset process. Why is this the case?
I suppose mainly because we are trying to look at how we can reform the working system from a structural point of view. So looking at how we can tweak the structure, on how we can minimize costs, but basically keeping in place the system as it currently operates. And what we need to be looking at is finding new ways of doing things. Each actor within the humanitarian system needs to be reflexive, self-reflexive, and see what their purpose for existence is within the humanitarian system. And this goes primarily for the UN agencies, I believe. Of course, the UN, with increasing funds, they have been delivering services. So they've been running humanitarian programs. But looking at the UN itself, we need to look at how we retain some of those values we talk about, the principles we talk about, looking at our norms, our policies, of where we stand, and then look at how we can move all the other stakeholders in that direction. On the one hand, we are talking about local actors being more visible in the system, being more present. They are already very active. They're doing a lot to cover many of those needs, but also now looking more at how we can be better prepared, how we can reduce the impacts of climate change, and how we can reduce disaster risks. So looking at it from a more comprehensive, a more a complete, a more holistic way is the right way to go about it. So it's crucial at this point that local actors do have a stronger voice in how we reshape the aid system and how we can be creating, we can be coming up with solutions that are truly locally led, locally defined, and locally managed. So when you look at it from that perspective, just tweaking the structures of how we currently do things, this is definitely not the way that we're going to find genuine solutions to how we do things differently.
So this is a strong call for a really participatory process, which is not the way it's considered so far. I think it's a fair thing to say also by many internationals, also by independent experts. We have often criticized this as well. If one looks at your partners, for example, on the international level, in practical terms, on UN agencies, on the big INGOs, etc., and maybe focuses a bit on prioritization as the key process these days, with humanitarian funding probably falling by a third compared to 2023, as soon as this year. Also, donors criticize international agencies for focusing their current reactions and realignments on prioritizing their own organizational structures much more than on affected people, on the right priorities, on how to save as many lives as possible, or local partnerships. In which way would you say this matches your experiences in Turkey or in the international arena? Is there an issue that the big aid agencies do react to this funding cut exercise, but in a very internal focused manner?
Yes, absolutely. But I also think this is very natural, Ralph, because of course we are looking at our own existence as entities within the aid system and look at how we can preserve what we have, what works well, and to change what needs to be changed or what needs to be dropped off. So in that sense, of course, agencies looking internally, inward, and prioritizing their own survival. I mean, this is also something we do as local organizations, because for us, of course, we have accumulated capacity, we have contextualized know-how, we have institutional knowledge, and we have community trust, which is very important, that we have been building, of course, over decades of existence. And this is something, of course, that we would want to preserve as much as we can. But it's more about how do we switch to something different? So look at what we've accumulated and look at what is it that we want to carry forward and what is it that we need to stop doing. So there is a need to review our structures, to have leaner structures and ways of doing things, but really looking at, is it fit for purpose, and what is it that we want to carry forward. Just to give you an example, at STL, at my organization, of course, we've been running big humanitarian programs, especially linked to the Syria crisis. We've been doing a lot of refugee support work. But of course, you know, coexisting in a few different provinces, running big programs, we could have actually done more, you know, growing our programs. But we felt this is not really the way we want to run things, because one agency doing more and more and more is not really serving the purpose. We need to find ways of connecting better with affected populations, especially in Turkey, where, of course, we see now Syrian refugees spread all around the country. So we're not only talking about programming in the border areas, but going beyond that. But of course, for one organization to reach out to all, that's not possible, and it's not the ideal situation. So we have been linking up with refugee-led organizations and working with them in terms of looking at how they do protection, how they can do better outreach, how they can create better impact as they engage with their communities. So we found ways of establishing more strategic relationship with the smaller organization, with community-based organizations, and with refugee-led, with women's-led organizations. So for me, this is a good example of how we need to find ways of broadening our scope, broadening our outreach, to be able to create greater impact, to be able to reach out to communities, to high-risk populations, to marginalized groups, and really look at creating better value for the resources that we put into the system. So even as a local organization myself, I need to think about better localizing. And this is, you know, the kind of approach that everyone in the system needs to have. Really look at what their added value is, and how they can use that in a way to create a greater impact, to reach out to more needs on the ground.
Many thanks for sharing this interesting example of Support to Life and your network approach compared to becoming operational all over the place. It leads me a bit to my next question, sometimes one might read the localization debate as we hear it right now, also in a way as if all these issues which come with this substantial competition and a lot of funding racing between international actors, coming with a lot of mandate creep, bureaucracy, many, many actors being around even in the international arena, and that all this would go away if we just localize in the substantial way and put the funding, the accountability mechanisms, the coordination on the local level. Is this sometimes also a too romantic way to look at localization? And do we need a more frank discussion how the right balance between international and local actors might look like in future?
Not at all, Ralph. I don't think this is at all a romanticized way of looking at it. It's just a matter of recognizing what is actually possible at the local level, because for decades, we've been talking about building capacity, but we know that capacity is there. So now we talk more about strengthening what's already there. We talk about sharing complementarity between the different stakeholders that are there, you know, to create an impact. And we have been seeing great examples of how local organizations, local civil society is taking the lead, is coming up with different ways of doing things. We talk about, you know, locally led protection. We talk about locally led cash programming. We talk about locally led coordination. And of course, you know, in whatever it is that we do, whether it's strategic priorities that we're focusing on, or whether it's ways of doing things, of how we channel the funding and how we better coordinate, there are ways in which local leaders are taking up the responsibility. And as long as they are able to access resources, we are creating some great examples of how this can be done. Of course, it's a challenge to really access funding and resources for many of these local initiatives, because there isn't really enough trust as to how this can happen and if this can truly be put into practice. So we need to see a bit more trust within the system that these locally led solutions are creating genuine alternatives. We are, of course, as local organizations, looking at domestic resources, looking at domestic funding, because we've also, of course, realized over time that being dependent on external aid, even though there's relatively, you know, greater funds available, really looking at domestically what we can mobilize. Because at the end of the day, of course, there are crises in which international actors move in, the international system moves in, but we have a lot of crises and we need to do a lot of work, not just post-crisis, but pre-crisis, where we need to mobilize our own resources and our own funding domestically. But once the international system is also able to trust and contribute to what's already being done, like I said, we have a lot of great practices. This is definitely doable. And I believe we'll be seeing more and more of this, especially at this time where we are under pressure to do things differently.
Many thanks. Maybe elaborating a bit on this point, also against the backdrop that, I mean, for good reasons, I guess, and you would also second that international NGOs, UN agencies are asked these days to redefine their role, to think more midterm, long-term, if this might be a point in time where they seriously need to question what the appropriate future role should be, and if not much more operational funding, resources, accountability, decision-making should be on the local level. And at the same time, some question there isn't a serious debate. What if we talk about a vision? What could be what could be the contribution of a truly locally led humanitarian system? And what might be the limits? Where might be also the limits of local organizations in times of shrinking spaces in many, many countries where local organizations don't have the scope to operate and need to count sometimes on more resilient international agencies, also in political terms, where there might be limitations in fragile contexts, in conflict crisis, where it's very hard to identify who should speak on behalf of a local community and what's the scope for this one to define what are the true needs, as we keep saying, of the affected populations. Would you agree that there are limitations and we need also a frank discussion about the limitations of local actors?
Well, There are limitations for sure, Ralph. I think the main limitation is really finding ways of reaching out to this broad spectrum of civil society, of communities, of affected, but also at-risk communities, because oftentimes the system responds at times of crisis. But we really need to, as we speak more and more of climate change and its impact on disasters, we really need to look at areas at regions, at communities under risk. And of course, it is a challenge to be able to reach out to them. And that's precisely why we need to find alternative ways, alternative intermediaries in which we can reach out to a broader range, a spectrum of communities. As for, you know, who speaks on behalf of whom question, I mean, civil society is very, very diverse. And of course, I mean, communities and societies are diverse. And I feel we need to give communities a chance to define what it is that they need, you know, instead of trying to impose one universal value of how things should be done. And we are at a time when values are also being challenged, our principles of, you know, human rights are being challenged. But then we talk about new values. We talk about solidarity. We talk about justice. We've never spoken about that in the aid system. We talk about ethics of care. So it's really about, at the end of the day, finding new words for taking better care of our people, of our planet. And I think we really need to trust the diversity of voices, the pluralism that is out there, and really focus in on what communities, you know, within their own context, what it is that they need. And as long as we find ways of doing this, of listening to what's out there and how we can better provide, I have full trust that we will be able to find ways of doing things and, of course, overcome some of the limitations that we see today as we look at it from a specific lens. But I think there is room for looking at same issues with different lenses and with different perspectives.
Speaking of pluralism, maybe elaborating a bit on that one. I mean, like, let's imagine a much better world where we have more resources for local actors, much more focus on ownership, much more scope for civil society and the communities themselves to define their needs and how they want to see the assistance to be provided. At the same time, in various contexts, I mean, you've been working in countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, Isisara. I've been operative in the Middle East. You might see a couple of crisis contexts where, for example, by local ownership, issues like gender, like climate-sensitive programming, diversity, etc., a rights-based approach even might not be prioritized by most of the communities one might expect, though in other contexts would be surely different. What's the extent to which pluralism should be a given, and to which extent do we need to be honest that these will be tough decisions and maybe some check and balances with international actors would be needed in these contexts?
Yes, precisely, Ralph. I think we do need to define at a time where values and principles are changing, are being challenged. I think we need to find global definitions, redefinitions of where we want to stand and how we want to see things moving forward. So yes, culturally, contextually, there are different voices, but I think we can globally, universally redefine where it is that we want to go. So on the one hand, acknowledging and accepting that there are local dynamics, maybe contrary to what we want to see, but nevertheless, trusting that overall, on the whole, we will be able to redefine. And this is exactly what I mean when I say perhaps, as the UN looks at its role, looking at how we redefine some of these values. For me, it's not about challenging gender equality. It's not about challenging climate change or about challenging diversity and inclusion, but looking for ways of how we can still move in that direction and taking the planet into account. And I still think there's room to be having those discussions at a global level while still looking at how locally we can move those processes forward.
Many thanks. I hope you are right. In the era where we have more and more concerns that the rules-based, rights-based approach might be deprioritized on the highest political levels these days, but hopefully we can defend this and follow a process you have described. Maybe refocusing on your international partners and what you expect from them. There is by nature often rather behind closed doors a discussion what should be the key role, for example, of international NGOs, UN agencies, of course, but maybe putting this aside right now, if you look at an INGO and would need to give advice to your international partners, what's the role model we are aiming at? Is it a bit how you try to set up support to life in Turkey with this more accompanying approach, a networking approach, if that's the right framework to describe it?
Ralph, I think complementarity is really, really important. So me as a national NGO working very closely with communities, with affected communities, so I have that contextual, or I'm able to bring out that contextual knowledge, the capacity that's already there, but linking that up with the broader issues we have. So with our international partners, I feel there's a lot of room for advocacy as well, advocating on how things can be done differently to bring up what is locally realistic, what is locally viable, and what is locally desired and needed. To link that up with some of the more global issues. So we just talked about values. That's precisely maybe what we need to be working on jointly to advocate on redefined values and perspectives of how we need to establish a better aid system that benefits all, but also moves us in the right direction. So I think that complementarity is important. We need to do a lot more advocacy and defend and protect some of those values, some of those principles that we cherish, and finding ways of doing that together. The complementarity, I feel, is very, very important.
And would you say complementarity defines itself always in the local context, or is there anything which can be named as being the future characteristic of an INGO in future? You named advocacy is needed much more, which is a contested issue in the humanitarian world as well, but a much debated.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was actually talking about linking the local with the global. So, with our international partners and through them, we are able to raise many of our issues at the regional level, at the global level, whether these are policy discussions or whether it's critical platforms. So really looking at how we can link the two, I think is absolutely critical, because working on the local level alone, yes, that is crucial in terms of reaching out to affected communities and looking at how we can cover some of those needs. But until and unless we link that with the more global issues and the global discussions and the platforms out there, we won't be able to really shift the system as a whole.
talking maybe about one very practical question in this regard. Key element of the so-called humanitarian reset, as it's been discussed and proposed also by OCHA, the coordination body of the UN these days, are pooled funds, and in particular, the country-based pooled funds set up and coordinated by OCHA in many countries. Many see this as an interesting point to move forward in the light that OCHA has proposed that about 50% of future humanitarian funding in a given crisis should go into these funds in future, with then out of this 70% going directly to local actors. At the same time, there are concerns this is not the right way forward. What's your take on this one? Would it make sense to decrease bureaucracy, to decrease competition and all the lobbying and fundraising in the capitals, etc., to move to one big channel to finance all kinds of operations in a crisis context, as long as it is participatory on the local level, of course? Would that make sense?
The country-based pooled funds are definitely one way of channeling more resources to local organizations, Ralph, but they're definitely not the only way and should not be the only way. In Turkey, for example, we've never had a country-based pooled fund. And so for my context, that would not be relevant. What is critical here is we do need to have more channels in which resources, funding is channeled to a broader base of organizations at the country level, at the local and community level. But we need to have diversity in that as well. For example, in Turkey now, we are looking at designing a locally led funding mechanism. And this is going to be a co-design with many stakeholders in the picture. But we need to find different ways of doing this. For every country, there are some examples of locally led funding mechanisms, different types of them. And I think we also need to invest in these different types of mechanism. Because at the end of the day, a country-based pooled fund is UN, is a UN-led mechanism. It's an external mechanism. So really looking at ways of how we can internalize, because OCHA moves in at times of crisis, but we're here before the crisis hits. We're here during and we're here after, and way, way longer after the crisis. So we really need to find localized mechanisms in which we're able to allocate more resources to a broader base of civil initiatives, for sure.
And would you call for, just following up on one aspect of this, would you call for one big locally led fund, or is it by nature the wrong idea to have one bigger mechanism to streamline, to increase efficiency while losing diversity? Some say then you might just have the same fragmentation you have so far on the international level on the local. If you create a series of local pooled funds now and a series of bigger local NGOs doing the same business as the international ones do now.
Yes, absolutely. They need to be diversified. I completely agree with that, because we are talking about a broad set of issues that we need to tackle. And we're talking about a diverse and a broad spectrum of actors, local actors who are able to do that. So having, you know, different types of funding mechanisms that would, you know, fit different types of needs. For sure, I think the greater diversity we have in terms of funding mechanisms, the more impact we're able to create and the more outreach we're able to have.
But you would see a tension? Too high diversity could lead to fragmentation? Or do you think in the system as it is now, it's the best thing which could happen to have as many diverse actors as possible on the local level?
I feel the more decentralized we are, the better we will be able to reach out to communities and to create greater impact. Because this would also give the option for those who want to support, find, you know, the diverse counterparts that are out there and to be able to link up with different groups. So I don't necessarily see this as a difficulty in terms of covering needs and reaching out. I feel the more channels we have, the more options we would have.
Many thanks, Seema. Maybe a final question on your outlook. We have seen, talking about the humanitarian reset, the crucial meeting in June in Geneva. Decisions haven't been that straightforward, as many say, as hoped for, as expected, maybe not, but as hoped for. If you look like until the end of the year ahead, what are your expectations, how this process will evolve? I mean, speaking realistically, to call it at least a progress, what would be the one or two steps definitely which need to be taken in very concrete terms? When would you call it there has been a success? We used the momentum at least for some change.
That's a difficult question, Rahul. I mean, I guess before looking at the output, the process, I feel, is very, very important because the process determines what the output or the outcome will look like. Therefore, we, you know, have been having some consultations. The NEAR network has been doing a great job in pulling us into the discussions. We've had a meeting with Dennis Brown, and we're looking at how we can engage in some of those discussions that are ongoing. And we also now have this discussion also directly with donors through ODI and NEAR. And I think the more we have these kind of platforms and the more we engage local voices in potentially, you know, how things could change, that will have an impact on how fit for purpose we're able to reform the system from what it is. So I would definitely put emphasis on more engagement and a more co-designed process for whatever lies ahead.
And you, I hope you still have hope that this might succeed.
I do, yes. I do, well.
Many thanks, Seema. I think that's one of the great features we all need to preserve these days, to have some hope, I mean, in this process, but also overall, I mean, contested aid and an era of a more and more fading rules-based system. It's probably the most challenging context one can imagine in our area of work. Many thanks for being with us. Many thanks for sharing your perspectives. It's been a great pleasure, and all the best for your important work.
Thank you very much, Ralph. It's been a pleasure for me too.
This is it today from the chat room, the podcast on humanitarian action. You can find all relevant links to this session in the show notes. If you have any feedback or a suggestion as to who should be a guest in the chat room, send us an email to info@charberlin.org.
Thanks for listening.